Hi there, and welcome to episode 316 of the Ski Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Martin, and today is the third in our series of Chamonix stories. Now, if you're a regular listener, you'll know I was lucky enough to spend 2 months in Chamonix last winter. Episode 313 focused on what makes the resort so special, from history to high mountain, glaciers to guides, but as I was interviewing people from around the valley, it soon became clear that I couldn't tell all their stories within that single episode. And so this series came together. I have 6 Chamonix stories to share with you, all touching on different elements of what makes Chamonix so special. In episode 314, we met Zagskis. Last week, we heard about silent sessions. And today, we find out about a new app that's been called both Tinder for the mountains and LinkedIn for mountain people. I spoke to founder Emil Wittrop Prestbergaard to find out more about this mountain community founded in Chamonix. So sit back and let's listen to the third of my Chamonix stories. I am delighted to be joined today by Emil, and I'm now going to attempt to do your surname. I don't speak Danish, but it is Wittrop Prestbergaard. How does that sound?
That's pretty good, yeah, actually. I mean, in Danish, you would say Wittrop Prestbergaard. And it actually means priest, bridge, farm, if you want the translation.
And the reason that I wanted to speak to you today, in terms of, you know, Chamonix, I've been looking at lots of different ideas around Chamonix, lots of businesses and people who've created something here that fits in with the demands and the communities in the mountains. And Oak is your brand, the Oak app. Some people may have heard of, you know, it was actually new to me this winter when a mutual friend of ours actually recommended it to us. So I guess maybe the first place to start would be if you could just kind of explain to us what Oak is.
I think the easiest explanation is that Oak is basically a community app to find mountain partners in every mountain hub in the world at the moment. We are biggest in the Alps. We're also big in the Nordics. You can also use it in the US. We've actually matched people in Greece, in Japan, in South America. So basically, we are a global community at this point. But it is a place where you can go and find like-minded people to do stuff in the mountains.
Yeah, and when we're saying like-minded people in the mountain, you and I have been skiing recently, but it's not just limited to skiing. We're talking about running, trail running, climbing, etc. as well, right?
Yeah, so we basically started out of Chamonix focusing on ski touring, but we quite fast realized that there was a need in almost any mountain sports, especially the ones that are dependent on partners like climbing, mountaineering, ski touring, where being more than one person is either a requirement or increases the safety of the group.
That makes a lot of sense. In fact, I saw this described, I think it was in one of your reviews, as like Tinder for the mountains.
Yeah, it's a good way to explain it. I think many can understand what it is when you say it's a Tinder for mountain people, as long as you say it with a smile, because we are not dating. We don't want to be a dating app, but I cannot, like, you know, if people want to meet each other and go out and do their thing, that's more than cool with us.
And it's about finding partners for those activities in the mountains. And so you're saying you started in Chamonix. Actually, I wondered if I could just take you back a little bit, because, you know, you're here in Chamonix now. I wondered what your background is, how you came to Chamonix and how Oak came about.
So, like, my professional background is in management consultant, or like you could also just say the corporate world. I spent 6-7 years in that. And at some point I just needed to do something else. Maybe it was also during Corona, like a lot of people like realized that there was more to life than work. And I'm definitely part of that story as well. I'm now in my mid 30s. So during Corona, I was around 30 years. So it was a good time to reflect and step up and think if I wanted to do something else with my life. And then I slowly started to make changes personally. So I spent more time outdoors. I picked up skiing again. I've always been skiing, but starting to do it even more and get more into ski touring. I've never done that before. So that was a hobby I picked up, mountain biking, hiking, and so on. So I started sort of to move in this direction again. Back in my early 20s, before I entered the corporate world in university, I did 2 seasons one in Saalbach in Austria, and then one in Valty in France. So I did my part of skiing and partying, but at some point I sort of like left that part behind me and tried to be a real adult. So I think all my 20s went with that, taking a degree in finance, being a management consultant, wearing a suit, being super serious about life, buying a car, buying an apartment. I had a dog and it's all very serious.
So you mentioned, buying a car, all of these things. I think many people have been through those steps and, we all, I think it's a truth to know that those things on their own are never enough. And you're right that Corona and COVID and the pandemic made people rethink things, particularly their connection to the outdoors and to nature. When it was something that we were kind of denied to a certain degree, and then it was one of the first things that you come back, it meant it was even more important. So you traded your car for a van, is that right?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, maybe part of the story is that my first step towards this lifestyle was joining a startup. And back at that time, there was a big shift in mindset and how I worked. In startups, there's ups and downs. In the beginning, this startup was great, and then it didn't go so well. And then I actually got fired, and I had 3 months of paid leave. And that's when I got the van, and then took the chance and said, "Fuck it! Now I'm going to leave everything behind. I'm going to take my van. I'm going to drive it to Chamonix, and I'm just going to take a break from everything." That was the sort of like the catalyst to rethink my life, downsize my lifestyle and, economic setup and everything.
But there's a big step between, moving to Chamonix, living in a van, going ski touring, and then starting an app to connect people. I mean, I'm guessing you found when you arrived in Chamonix, you were looking for other people to, go out ski touring or mountaineering with, and saw that there was a kind of need for something like Oak.
Yeah, I think it's like I was definitely in a mindset of just, solving my own problem. I came to Chamonix to do ski touring, right? So I was like, I needed to find people to ski with. And so I did like everyone else and went to Facebook, joined WhatsApp groups, met people randomly and so on. I think because I didn't have a job and I came from startup and I knew I wanted to do something, I was in a mindset of figuring out and, okay, maybe there's something here to work with. But at the time, I didn't really pay attention to that this could be an idea. Basically, I just enjoyed 3-4 months in Chamonix ski touring. And then it was first half year later when I was in Portugal, still like taking time off. I was down surfing in Portugal with my van as well and my girlfriend. And that's when the idea actually came back. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. This idea is still in my head. Maybe I should start working on it. But it definitely started just out of my personal need. And I could see that, okay, here, there's definitely something here to solve.
And you said you're a management consultant, but are you a developer as well? I mean, I wouldn't know how you go about starting creating an app itself.
No, I'm more of a generalist, I would say. I've never built one single piece of software in my life before. I've built a lot of Excel sheets. Maybe some would say that helps, but it was definitely a big task to build the first version of Oak. And I would say this was pre-AI. There was no vibe coding. There was no ChatGPT, no Claude, no Cursor, anything. Like, it was before that period. So I actually did have to learn it from the ground. So that was a big challenge.
So how long did it take then between thinking, right, okay, I want to create something here and for it to go live? I know you probably went through various different stages of testing and things, so the actual live point might be hard to define, but when would you say Oak went live?
December 2023. That's when it got live on the App Store, at least. So that was the biggest milestone. It was basically I started that summer, so that was August 2023. I knew I had a hard deadline. Like, I was financing this all myself with my personal savings. I could sort of calculate my own runway, like you do with a company. So I knew where I will run out of money. And I could easily see I have one season in me. Like, if I can't show anything to the market this winter, then I need to find a job. So that was like the hard truth. I had to build something that was ready to take to market before winter 2024 or 2023, 2024. And I think that sort of just set me up of that mindset that everything that is not driving towards that goal. I just have to like push that aside. So we didn't even incorporate the company in 2024, right before we did our first fundraising, because like there was no time for that kind of stuff. It was just about building.
So 2 years in, you've got a lot of users, and there's a lot of features on the app now. Yes, you know, there are groups. You can find people. If you're a woman who wants to join a running group in Chamonix, you can do that. If you're ski touring in Verbier, you can do that. If you want to find someone who wants to go mountaineering in Zermatt, you can do that. But you can also do things like book a guide and book courses and other elements like that as well.
Yeah, so I think just going back to the original idea, I think one of the key elements in building Oak has been solving a real problem, but also in my time in Chamonix, I also identified a need to rethink the guide industry, because I could see that there is a need to do this differently. I would say that coming to Chamonix and wanting to learn the sports, it's a struggle, even in Chamonix. Like, where do you start? How do you book a guide? How do you go from a beginner to advanced? How do you get the skills that you want? Like, it's all scattered. Like, it's not structured. If you go to surfing, for instance, like, someone has already solved this problem. Like, there's already a lot of technology there and a lot of platforms where you can go and say, okay, I'm a beginner. These are the steps that I need to take to get to this level, to understand where you are and what you can do. And I think one of the things I really struggle with in the mountain sports, that in, especially in the more like technical mountain sports like climbing and mountaineering and ski touring, is it's hard to find that information. And it's also hard to actually go out and then acquire those skills, booking the guide, knowing what to learn. It's all in different places. And I think combining that with the real need to actually find partners, I think that's where we saw a business model also come into play in Oak.
Yeah, and you know, as well as the information as how you can educate yourself and how you can find other people to go with, you can also plan trips on there. I notice there's a feature to put a CV of the different kind of summits or peaks that you've achieved. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we really wanna become, and that's something that will be more present in the app in the future. Is that we wanna become your mountain identity. I think for us, we often talk about it as the LinkedIn for mountain people. We want people to care about building their profile. And I think sometimes I like to use Strava as an example. Strava is a great tool. I use it myself for my runs and tracking and so on. And there's going to be some similarities in some of our features towards Strava. But in terms of how we are going to do things differently, is that Strava is about data. It's about tracking. It's about those daily runs and so on. Oak is much more about your achievements, about what is it that you want to learn, where is it that you want to go with your sports, and really, like, you know, becoming that mountain identity. And I think that's also where there's a lot of different, there's some things that when you talk about the sports like running and cycling versus mountain sports, there's some core things that really like put them apart, because the mountain sports are way more about learning and educating yourself and staying safe, having the right skills. It's almost a requirement, right? You need to know the right stuff.
And all that information you can get through the app. And I have to ask you, Oak means lots of things to me, but what does it mean to you? Why did you pick that name for the brand?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I knew it needed to be short. That was like the rule. It needed to be short. Need to be easy to say in multiple languages. So Oak was sort of like, okay, that fit into that box. But then it actually also stands for Outdoor Adventure Club with a Danish K. And I did ask some of my UK friends, and they said they could accept the Danish K. So it has a meaning. We're not communicating that well, but it actually has a meaning.
Oh, that is fantastic. Well, you know, given that we've already compared Oak to Tinder, LinkedIn, and Strava, if it takes all of the best elements of all of those, you know, and brings them together, and brings together that outdoor mountain community, and gives people the opportunity to, exactly, you know, meet others and to learn skills, then, you know, I think really you've nailed it there, Emil. So been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for your time today.
Likewise.
I hope you found this look at Emil's journey and the founding of Oak interesting. I love getting feedback from our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you have any comments, please do let me know. You can do that by leaving a comment on Spotify, Instagram, or Facebook, or drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. We're also on WhatsApp, where I release exclusive material ahead of each episode there. So you can look in the show notes for all those links. I have had feedback from several listeners since our last episode. Nikki Weber said, "I really enjoyed listening to episode 313. Your love of Chamonix is evident." Erin Flynn said, "Episode 314 was a great listen. Loved testing Zag skis at the ski test." Keen listeners might remember Erin from episode 234, when she told us about her own founder story for Ruanua clothing. And Judy Swens said, "I'm spending part of my time off this July in Chamonix and loved your podcast episode about it." Thank you, Judy. There are now 316 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, all available at theskipodcast.com. I had a look through our stats earlier, and amazingly, every single one of those episodes has been listened to in the last week. That normally means that someone is working their way through our back catalogue. So if that was you, listener, I hope you enjoyed the Ski Podcast marathon. And if it wasn't you, but you'd like to keep some winter in your life this northern summer, then just go to theskipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest. If you did enjoy this week's episode, I'm going to make just one request. The single best thing you can do for the show is to share it with one person who you think would get something out of it. I'm not asking for a review, a follow, or a donation. Just send this episode to one person who you think would enjoy it. Right, I'll be back next week with another Chamonix story, this time with David Webster, better known on YouTube as Chamonix Ski Bum. Until then, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.